Honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler. Brought to you by this local station and its sponsors. And presented everywhere on the air and online by Paul Everett's RV Country. With 8 locations in 5 western states.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. Getting to know 3 of the men scheduled to visit the National World War II Memorial this week, flying free of charge with Central Valley Honor Flight out of Fresno, California. This is something that's happening all over the country. Monday night at 8:30, you can welcome heroes home in Bakersfield at the airport there. In Fresno, Wednesday night, April 27th at Fresno Yosemite International Airport. The Freeze family should have a pretty large contingent there to welcome home Central Valley Honor Flight because there are 5 Freeze brothers going on the same flight. Harry, Bobby, John, Richard, and Don Freeze all served our country, and they're all scheduled to make this journey of a lifetime together. Don is the oldest at 91. He's a recipient of the Bronze Star and the Purple Heart, serving with the 1st Infantry Division. And we'll find out now how he ended up in the Battle of the Bulge.
We had pulled back to Belgium to get new reinforcements and get them trained to understand a little bit about what was going to happen to them in the front lines. I don't know, first notice we got, we had been there about a week or so when we heard about the Battle of the Bulge and the Germans. You could see them flying over and in some cases dropping paratroopers not far from us. So we actually just started walking toward where the Germans were at. Oh, it just got pretty intensive.
And, of course, the Ardennes forest, heavily forested area and well-fortified, and the weather is infamous in this time of world history, the worst winter they had ever seen. And I'm sure growing up in Fresno probably hadn't prepared you for the cold conditions you faced there.
To begin with, it was quite rainy and muddy and things that we weren't used to here in Fresno, but the cold weather settled in, and that, of course, got things even worse because it got cold enough so if you tried to dig a hole, unless you had dynamite or something to blast with or TNT, it was just almost impossible to dig holes, but until you got through at least a foot and a half or so of the ground. We tried to always dig in the 60-millimeter mortars prior to our foxholes or in the woods. We tried to get sleeping holes and stuff so you could put a top on. We put logs over the top to keep from getting clobbered when the artillery came in. And then, of course, it got real cold. And when the Battle of the Bulge started, it was real cold weather. And we wanted to be a mortar squad, but for a long time we were looking for German soldiers in the woods. And everybody became an infantryman, at least for about a week until we got settled and knew what was going on.
So you had to rely on a rifle for self-defense and self-preservation with, you know, enemy soldiers wandering through the woods. And I guess you had developed a pretty sharp shooting eye. I've seen some of your sharpshooting medals on the wall there, too. Did you feel pretty comfortable and confident with that rifle on your shoulder?
Oh, I was confident about the rifle. I wasn't confident about what was going to happen because we couldn't use the mortars very well. We were in a heavy, heavy woods where they planted trees in Germany. Every year they plant trees to grow up and use for fence posts and then lumber. So all we could think about was getting undercover and going forward when they said forward.
I can't imagine it was very easy to sleep at night for multiple reasons. First, you're probably shivering to death, and second, you don't know what's out there. Did you find any way to kind of help you cope with the ever-present danger of an enemy and Mother Nature with the fierce weather?
Oh, you get used to know what's going on, and about half the men would stay up at night no matter where we were stationed, and the other half would try to sleep, and believe it or not, you can sleep. Under very, very bad conditions, you can sleep real well after a while.
When you see that happen, and you described how the very first thing you had to do in Europe in World War II was pull a dead officer out of a tree, when you see the guys that you know go down, you know that they're not coming back, doesn't it make you wonder, am I next? When's my number going to get called? You know, when is my time going to be up? Is that something that you couldn't avoid thinking about?
Well, you couldn't avoid thinking about it because you look at some of the men that had been with the outfit, with the company for years, and maybe you only got wounded slightly once or twice, and then all of a sudden he catches it, an artillery round or machine gun or something, and he's dead. So you wonder, when is my turn?
Now you have the Purple Heart, and that tells me that you were eventually hit. What were the circumstances of that, and what can you tell us?
Well, we were in the attack situation and going again through the woods. Normally the riflemen take care of anything out in front, but in this case we were trying to clear out of small woods that the tanks, Patton and them, had gone through, and they left little pockets that we tried to clean out as infantrymen. One of the situations developed where they had bypassed a machine gun, I guess it had a lot of ammunition and were quite accurate, and they opened fire on our mortar section as we were going through, and of course first thing you do is hit the ground if you can, and I hit the ground and look for anything that was low, and I ended up in a slit trench, straddle trench, or whatever you want to call it. But even though it was real messy, it did save my life because only part of my rear end was showing, and I got nicked on it. And then shortly thereafter, when shrapnel came in, I got wounded on the wrist, and nothing serious.
Now, I want to give our listeners the full picture of this here. When you talk about a slit trench, somebody might change the second letter and slit for that trench, and you know, there are a lot of different pictures we could paint of that, but maybe understanding what those trenches are normally used for would give our listeners an idea what you're dealing with.
It's a toilet. And it was full.
So you were up to your eyeballs and stuff that didn't smell too good, and it probably stayed that way for a while?
Right. I was in there for 2-3 minutes before I could get out, before they got the machine gunner.
Did you need immediate medical attention, or would no one want to come very near you at that point?
Oh, at that time, there was no medical attention needed. I mean, our first aid man just bandaged me up, and we had no problem. It was shortly after that, though, that I got a slight case of frostbite, so they sent me back to the hospital to recover from that or be treated for that. And when I got there, they found out I had yellow jaundice. This is what we used to call it. Now they call it hepatitis, but the yellow eyes and all that stuff. So I was about 2 weeks in the hospital in France, and that was wonderful. Laying on just a little canvas cot was heaven. But they got it cured and everything, and told me about one day, they told me I was going into the replacement center and be sent back up to the front. And of course, I wanted my outfit, so I went AWOL and headed for the front and had no trouble at all. Everybody, even though they knew I was AWOL, I was going in the right direction, so I finally got back to my outfit and resumed the battle.
Now, you say that all so matter-of-factly, but I'm thinking of myself in your shoes, and your whole life as a member of the military is based on following orders and not disobeying them. What made you decide that in this case you weren't going to listen to them and you're going to do your own thing?
Just the fact that I wanted to be back among people I knew, well, that I soldiered with, and I was sure they'd welcome me back, so I went that way.
And clearly you made it.
Yes.
Well, when you look back at the incident that earned you the Purple Heart, you're wounded on your rear, on your hand, you dealt with the contents of the slit trench, ended up with the jaundice and were in the hospital, the amount of time that took you out of combat. There's another medal that hangs near that Purple Heart, the combat infantry badge on his wall. It's the Bronze Star. And Don, one thing I've realized over the years in interviewing so many veterans is a lot of time it's hard to get them to talk about their decorations. I find some guys who won't even tell me about the prestigious medals they have until after I'm done interviewing them. But I've seen the Bronze Star. I know it's there. And I know you don't like to draw attention to yourself, but if you can, share with me the events that led to you being awarded that Bronze Star and how you experienced it.
Well, it occurred during one of our attack phases. We were moving up through the woods, and all of a sudden we got clobbered by tanks or tank fire. It was pretty devastating because we were caught off guard. Quite a few people went down, and there was one small group that was being surrounded by the German infantry that was counterattacking. There was no way to use the mortars at that time, and so I helped by going forward and helping to lay down a little bit of rifle fire, trying to relieve the men that were up there, and we finally got the Germans to retreat, and they thought it was, actually was the only thing I could do, but they thought it was pretty good, so they gave me a medal.
Well, and it sounds like, as I'm trying to picture this in my head, listening to you describe it, so the American soldiers were surrounded by the Germans. They're in jeopardy of being killed or captured if no one did anything.
I guess that's the way you'd put it. We just, all we did was help move the Germans back so it would relieve our infantry people that were being surrounded, and we got them out. That's about it.
You hear that humility? It's a pretty familiar sound if you listen to this program on a regular basis, because it is one of the defining characteristics of our greatest generation. All the more reason the mission of Honor Flight is so important. Honorflight.org is the website. I encourage you to become a part of it wherever you're listening to the show today. And again, if you're in my neck of the woods, I'll see you at the Fresno Airport Wednesday evening, 5:30, to welcome home a whole plane load of hometown heroes. That's the program for today. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.